And welcome, everyone, to a very special episode of Podcast Them Softly. This is Nick, and of course, I'm joined by Frank. What's going on, buddy?
Not much. How are you?
I'm doing good. I know we're very excited. Joining us today is filmmaker Reed Morano. Reed got her start as a cinematographer, having shot the acclaimed indie features Frozen River, Kill Your Darlings, The Skeleton Twins, and Little Birds, as well as shooting a number of episodes of the edgy HBO series Looking. And currently, her extremely powerful and visually stunning feature directorial debut, Meadowland, can be seen in theaters and on various streaming platforms, including iTunes. And in a few months, her director of photography skills will be seen yet again on the small screen with the new HBO series Vinyl, which is from executive producers Martin Scorsese, Terrence Winter, and Mick Jagger. We're really excited to have Reed on the show. Frank and I both just saw Meadowland recently, and we were both truly affected by it. So it's an honor to have you with us tonight, Reed, for a chat. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I just want to get right into it with Meadowland. Now, I'm the type of person that usually watches a lot of dark stuff that people tend not to like. Like, I'm a huge fan of Abel Ferrara. I think he's fantastic.
Right.
And, you know, Lars von Trier. And I love the second season of True Detective because I thought it was so much darker than the first season. But I have to say that I can't really remember being affected so much by a film as I was with Meadowland. I suppose maybe Antichrist really shook me in a different way, but in a comparable way. But Meadowland left me with like a knot in my stomach.
Wow. That's...
For a couple hours after I saw it, and I was still talking to Nick because I know Nick watched it twice. I just watched it the one time. But that being said, that shouldn't deter people at all from seeing it because this film is absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. I mean, thank you for making this. And I mean, I don't even know where to begin with this. I guess I want to know the genesis and what drew you to this project.
Well, you know, I was kind of going along in my life as a DP. You know, I actually went to film school for directing, but I fell into DPing and probably because subconsciously I just felt like I needed more life experience to be a director than just straight out of college. And so what happened was I got really into cinematography and you know, ended up doing that for the last, you know, almost 20 years. And I always figured at some point, someday I would direct something, but it had to be the right story. It had to be something really that I felt confident about. And I did a movie in a few years back called Autumn Blood that nobody will probably ever really see. It's kind of like this movie we made in Austria, and it's kind of like a fable, and there's no dialogue, and it was a very interesting shoot. But one of the producers on it asked me, you know, did you ever think about directing? And he ended up sort of suggesting that I should, and he was like, you know, I'm going to find something for us to do together. And I was like, yeah, sure, you know. And he ended up sending, you know, I had already been sent a few scripts for directing, like of other varieties, things that were dramas, but not nearly as dark as this. And then, you know, other types of things. But I never really fully, you know, committed to anything because I didn't know if it was the right thing. And when he finally sent me the script, he had sent a few others initially, and, you know, this one, I started reading the script and I was like, I don't know what I think about these people. I really wasn't like connecting to them, but then I read, you know, the scene that was in the car where she finds the cookie in the back seat, and, it got, you know, that whole thing basically, kind of destroyed me just like reading that. And I thought, wow, this is like really powerful stuff. And it's sort of the thing you always look for as a cinematographer. You look for scenes that can evoke an emotion that you haven't felt before. without words, you know, that can almost like visually tell you everything you need to know, you know, and I always, for me, it's like the least amount of dialogue possible. It's always is like less is more. And it's not that I think I appreciate well-written dialogue, but I really like it to be used sparingly because in real life, people aren't talking 24/7 all the time. And like things are happening in real life without words. And I feel like that's the problem with a lot of movies is that there are so many lines of dialogue sometimes that you don't get to see, but read between the lines. You don't get to feel what the characters are feeling because they're telling you everything verbally. And anyway, I just appreciate movies that do that. And when I read that scene, you know, the original script that Chris Rossi wrote was, had all the bones there of these characters, you know, mostly the woman. It concentrated on Sarah, but it was that scene that got me, you know, because I didn't really connect with the characters initially, and that was one of the things I ended up working on with Chris was to try to make them more sympathetic, because I think that unfortunately, you know, sometimes people do bad things when they go through a tragedy, they start to do things that might be considered unlikable. And in the case of this film, you know, the character of Sarah does a lot of things that might piss people off. But the key was, to me, the trickiest part and the challenge of it, which enticed me into wanting to do the movie, was that I feel like I could identify with her, you know? Like, I feel like I've been there where not in such a bad place, but in a place where I felt like there were no repercussions for anything I was doing and that, fuck it, like, who cares, you know? And, like, so I felt like there was a way to make the audience sympathize or empathize with the two main characters, and I really wanted to build up the husband as well because he wasn't as large of a presence in the original script. And not because I thought that the woman needed help. It was more like I felt like I would empathize with her more if I understood their whole family, you know what I mean? Like, it's like if you're just going along, and also there's the way they're dealing with it, the contrast in the way that they're both dealing with it, even though they're both kind of going through the same thing, I think would play really well against each other. And in terms of a well-rounded film, like that tells you a full story, you know? And so anyway, that scene with the cookie is what drew me to the script initially. And I just felt like if Chris could write a scene like that, imagine what we could do together, you know, this, it really got me. And I felt like if I was just in tears reading this on the page, imagine what we could do on the big screen with the right actors. So,
yeah. It really is. And like Frank said, it's a tough film. It's a movie that it's a movie that really does require patience from the audience and a willingness to go to some pretty emotionally draining places. And I think maybe for the it's interesting, the very evocative and stylish and moody trailer does not necessarily inform you exactly like what is going on in the film, which I found very interesting. I love that. I love trailers that sort of set a tone and a mood and aren't exactly they don't need to be so explicit about what the movie is all about. And one of the things that really grabbed me, I want to just say right off the bat, was how visual everything was. And I would have to imagine that a big part of that is, you know, has to come from your background as a cinematographer. But of late, there's been some very, very strong pieces of filmmaking that have come from an interesting cross-section of directors where they're also shooting their own movies. I'm thinking of stuff like Beasts of No Nation and stuff like Metro Manila and now Meadowland. And you get when I sit down to watch a film that's been shot by the director, I always get a sense that this is truly what this filmmaker wants us to see. There is no not that a director and a director photographer can't have a fantastic relationship. We all know that they can and have. But there's something so personal about it. And that's what really got to me about when watching this movie is how personal it felt and how it's a movie that clearly was made because people wanted this movie to get made. You know what I mean? This isn't a film I kind of feel like a studio is super excited to, you know, get involved with because of the themes and because of how challenging it is. This is a movie that was made, you know, for the sake of art.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think I was really lucky to get to stumble upon the script and meet Chris and meet Maddie, the producer, and like have them entrusted to me, you know, but I do think I was also taking a huge risk because it's not this like sure thing. And I've been sent like, you know, scripts that are more like a crowd pleaser type of story. And I just realized that's like not who I am. I'm not like, I'm not saying I wouldn't make something that would be more commercial at some point, but I just don't know. I had more interest in making something that would really affect people, even if it was at a price that like this movie couldn't be super commercial because it's so dark. Because the movies that I've seen that have really like affected me have been that dark. You know, like one of the biggest inspirations I realized like was for this film was Requiem for a Dream, which, you know, I think was a hugely pretty popular film for as dark as I find it to be. But you know, that idea of putting the audience into a really uncomfortable space, like it's almost just hard to watch, you know? And that's sort of what I wanted to do here because I like movies that make me feel uncomfortable. And I like, stories that make me feel so much emotion. I can't even hold it in while I'm watching a movie, you know, like, because yes, I also like movies that are like light and funny and that I don't have to think when I'm watching them. So I guess I kind of like the whole, you know, gamut. But I felt like if I'm going to come out of the gate with something, I want to come out of the gate with something that is going to leave an impression on people and not just going to be safe. And for that, you know, it's a huge risk to do and it might go terribly wrong, but like that was why we made Meadowland. Also because I have a fascination with grief and I feel like I hadn't found a movie yet that I felt like really represented what I feel grief feels like. And, you know, I've never been, luckily, thankfully, I've never been through anything I think remotely as awful as this. You know, like the only thing I initially had to draw on from my own experience for this film was, you know, when I first got the script, the only thing biggest thing that had ever happened to me was my dad passed away when I was 18 and he was like my best friend. And a lot of what happens in the film, it's like coming from a place of like, this is how I felt. This is this weird Twilight Zone feeling I felt like I was in after my dad died. And the world just is like not the real world. And you're just floating around in this world, but it's like, it's not the real world. It's some like weird alternate universe. And you know, I always used to say to everyone, I feel like I'm living in a Twilight Zone now because he's not here. And that's what I imagine is happening with Sarah and Phil. And so, you know, and just things stem from experiences like, you know, the scene where Luke's character Phil kicks over the memorial on the side of the road came from after I told Chris a story about something I did after my dad passed away, and Chris came up with this beautiful moment. And that's just like a great example of the director and the writer collaborating to like the utmost, you know. Like what was so fun about working with Chris is like, we agreed, you know, we were like, we need this moment. We need this moment for Phil. We need him to act out too. You know, he can't just be so impotent. Like he can't just be so wishy-washy. Like he's dealing differently, but he needs to have his moment to sort of be angry at the world. And what's interesting about him is he's actually suppressing anger the whole movie. And that's what I think makes it such a fascinating character. But we didn't want to fall into a familiar trope of like the cop, you know, being too aggressive with someone at work or whatever it is. And, you know, I one time told Chris a story where, you know, I had gone back to my family's restaurant after my dad passed away, which his presence was there, you know, and like he built that place. And I had avoided it for almost, you know, like 6 months. And I went back there for the first time after he died. And I was sitting at the bar having drinks with his best friend. And we started talking, you know, of course we were talking about him and I got really emotional. And I like went back into my family's the office of the restaurant and just like tore down all the papers and the files and basically literally destroyed this office. And this is a family of like crazy Italians who, like, if you, and they're just like psychotic about the restaurant, and if you drop like a, you know, like a straw wrapper on the floor, they're like, pick that fucking shit up, you know. And I went into the, you know, like I went into this office and I like literally I wrecked it, like an explosion happened. And I don't even know what I was doing. I like lost control of my body, and I had never done anything like that before. I was always like the good grandchild and like, you know, the good daughter, and I never, and no one ever said a word to me about it. And when I told Chris that story, we got off the phone, and then, you know, I think a day later he came back to me with the memorial scene. And it's just an example of like how two heads are better than one. You know, it's like that moment of, it was almost like having an actor moment with Chris, because like he was the actor and I was directing him, because it was sort of like I gave him an idea, a concept, and then he like totally brought his own thing to it. And so it's anyway, that was sort of the experiences. I'm going off on a complete tangent here, but you know, that was,
oh, it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically like what led to a lot of the feelings in Meadowland, and just being a mom, you know, I'm a mom of two boys, and trying to put myself in Sarah's shoes, you know, at first I was like, she can't be crazy. She can't be crazy. And then as I got to know her better and really start to think about what it would feel like, I was like, I would probably do worse. And that was one of the things Olivia and I talked about a lot, was that it's like, we would do worse. We would do worse than what she's doing. And she's being so brave. And, you know, like even my son, Casey, plays Jesse, their son in the movie, who goes missing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that added an extra layer of sort of connection to the story where, you know, it made it difficult. It made me really relate to it. And then also I worried in casting him that it might cloud my judgment in editing the film to its, like, full potential, because it's like I was automatically going to feel all these feelings. But I think it was the best thing I could do, because the way we arrived at that casting was because we couldn't find the right kid, and he was interested in auditioning and had sort of bugged me about it, and I was pushing it away. And then finally, like, I realized I was in a desperate situation, and there were no kids that were really like doing it for us, and he's not an actor. And I was like, you know what? He's not an actor, but I know I can probably get him to do what I need him to do. And he auditioned and we ended up casting him. But I think there were so many benefits to it. It was like, I could say to Olivia, like, who, you know, is a mother now, you know, now I have a, you know, like I'm putting myself in this dark place with you, and like, you're not going to go there alone, and we're going to go on this journey together, and we're going to come out of it together, you know, and I'm going to bring you back from it, and we're going to take care of each other. So it was really like powerful connection, I think, for me and Olivia, you know, also me being operating the camera with her and just being right next to her. And I think that really helped us, you know.
Yeah. You mentioned how you would see films and they weren't grounded in reality. And like I had mentioned with how I like Abel Ferrara's films, or super dark films that I like The Counselor and stuff like that, I'm never as affected by those films for as dark or transgressive as they can get, because it doesn't take place in my world or a world that I'm a part of. And that's what really shook me about Meadowlands, because, or I should say Meadowland, because that film is all too real. And that film takes place in our world, and there's not a ton of dialogue, like you were saying, and a lot of scenes like that. It's all reactions of the characters in the film. And I will say that I've always loved Luke Wilson, and I think he gives his best performance in this film. I mean, I've never seen Luke Wilson like this before, and he's just fantastic.
He was great. I was so happy. I'm glad that you're saying that. I couldn't be more, like, pleased by Luke. And he brought things to it that I totally did not expect. the way that he chose to do certain things. And yeah, I mean, he is a mystery, still a mystery to me. I loved working with him, and I think he, you know, I had faith he could do it. Like, I never once really doubted he could do it. And I'm glad that I had that attitude, because it's so much more interesting. I don't know about you, but it's like so much more interesting to me to have actors portray something that they've never really, you know, like,
yes,
that they've done before. It's like, I could have, you know, when I initially got the script, I immediately started thinking about The Usual Suspects. And once Olivia expressed interest in the film, because that's kind of how actually she came on board, is that she found out about the script and she pursued me, and we met, we had lunch, and we basically fell in love with each other. And then she was like, you need to come to my house and I'll audition. Basically, she was like, I'll read for the part. And I was like, that's kind of crazy, but okay. And I was probably more nervous than she was, but she, you know, that's the whole thing, that once Olivia captured me and kind of, we were both so intrigued by each other in that first sort of reading, I was like, I gotta go with her, because I don't really know. I don't really know if this is the right choice right now, but I have this weird gut feeling that she can do this, because based on this little interaction that we've had, I feel like she can do it. And what's so much more, and I'm not one to like shy away from a risk or a challenge. And that was like, you know, the first risk was like signing up to do Meadowland. And then the second like challenge was like, okay, nobody thinks Olivia can do this, but I do. I think she can do it. And like, I'm banking on the fact that she's going to do this. And then it was like, okay, this is actually super cool to like make a movie with two actors who have not had this opportunity before. And like, I also have not had this opportunity before, and nobody, they're taking a risk on me too. So like, can we all rise to the occasion here? And that like idea of, it's so much more exciting to do something that's surprising than to do something, you know, is a sure thing. And yeah, so Luke is like, Luke still managed to surprise me, even though I find it like, I felt confident he could do it. You know, like when I saw him in Enlightened, there was like, you know, a few episodes of that he really like dominated.
It's an underrated show.
Yeah. His episodes were, yeah, there was like, you know, one in particular that sticks out in my mind where I was like, I saw that and I really knew he could do it. And I just thought he is a totally underrated actor who's underused, and, mm-hmm. you know, he has probably a lot more range than people realize. And, I was just like, I want to do this with him. And, yeah, and I was really surprised at some of the choices he made. But like, I was like, I never would have thought of that, and it's so good, you know.
Well, and like you said, when you get a chance to see an actor sort of out of their quote unquote comfort zone, the results can sometimes be all the more interesting because you're not prepared for it. I obviously a completely different movie in terms of tone. But I did see some of the same pained sense of depression that he brought to aspects of his role in Royal Tenenbaums. And that's one of the things that I saw behind his eyes. He can play sad really well. He can play upset mm-hmm. really well. He's not asked to do that very, very much. And I thought he was excellent. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies that is dependent on two very intense lead performances. And I just want to I want to commend Olivia Wilde's performance, because, you know, I've of course been familiar with her work now for a while, and she's done a lot of comedies and she's done some dramas, but here I feel like this is a severe coming out for her as a as an artist and as an actress. And I was really enjoying watching her on Dahl and M recently too. So it was it was interesting to be watching that weekly on the, you know, on the TV, and then see her in such a forceful, dramatic, really intense performance where honestly, like you get a sense that someone's putting their soul out there in front of a camera. And I guess I'm not surprised to hear you say that she pursued you. And I was curious to know how it all, you know, came about. You know, we noticed that she's a producer of the film. So I sort of had a sense that maybe that she was one of the guiding hands with this project. And I just want to say, you know, I'm 6 weeks away from becoming a father myself. And my wife and I watched this film together, and she knew up front what the subject matter was, but still wanted to see it. She's a big fan of these types of movies, you know, in the independent skewing film. That's all, you know, drama. But we were both just totally blown away. And I can't imagine how, when I watch, down the road, I'm sure I'll revisit this movie. I always say I can't revisit stuff. It's too dark, but I always find a way to do it. I always justify it. Oh, it looks great. Or the performance was great. I got to see it again. This movie's going to hit home, it's going to hit hard for a lot of people, with kids and who have a family. And I think that it's just a piece of, Frank and I were talking about it before. The ending is so lyrical, and we don't want to spoil anything about the last act of this film. But I really appreciated your sense of visual storytelling, about not relying so much on words to tell the story, because these are, after all, movies. This is, you know, moving pictures. We're here to see stories ostensibly told through visuals. And that's one of the things I really responded to with your movie and your work in general on this film. It's just it feels like a walking nightmare for these, you know, waking walking nightmare for these two characters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the idea. It's funny, like the editor and I always talked about. She's actually the first person who was able to like put it into words of what I felt like this world needed to feel like to the audience, like needed to envelop the audience in such a way, and like a fever dream. And
yep, that's what that I felt.
It was supposed to feel like just not right and disorienting and uncomfortable. And that is sort of what I was. So I'm glad that you felt that. You know, it's also just like disjointed in a way. And I think that idea of, when I look back at that like time period in my life, I'm like, I don't remember like complete flow of life. Like, I just remember moments. There's just moments, and I just feel like I wasn't really connecting. You know, it's just kind of like going from moment to moment and just trying to make it through the day without thinking about it. I think the other thing is that what's interesting about the concept of the film is that even though it's a unique subject matter or a unique situation that happens to the characters, a lot of people who have responded to the film that, you know, they can relate to it in different ways. You know, like everybody kind of brings their own emotions to the table when they're watching the movie. And it's sort of like, even though this maybe didn't happen to them, they're feeling it. Like, they're really feeling it. And, you know, I think it's easy as a parent, number one, to totally feel it, because you can't help but imagine yourself in the situation. It's like when you mentioned Antichrist earlier, I actually had a hard time. I love Lars von Trier, but I had a hard time watching Antichrist, because when it got to that scene that, you know what I'm talking about, I literally could not watch it as a parent with two young boys. You know, I just couldn't watch it. I was like, this is the most awful thing I've ever seen. So I get why, like, this movie is hard for people to watch. I mean, you don't actually see anything bad happen, but it's just that idea of this happened to these people. And what's also kind of, you know, interesting is I always wondered how would people react to it, like the people who have really lost children. And, you know, I actually have a member of my family who has lost both her sons, and she was sort of the person I had my eye on the most throughout this process in terms of, well, what would she think of it? And, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And I think she really, she dealt well with the movie. She came and saw it, and she loved it, and she was just really responded well to it and held it together. And what's interesting now is that I'm starting to get a lot of feedback from just viewers watching a movie, because now that it's out, you know, now that it's in theaters and now that it's also on VOD, so many people can see it. And so I, you know, I'm on Twitter and I get like responses from people on Twitter about the film, which have all been really positive. And, you know, I had a parent recently send me a message saying that he was a father who saw the film and that he thought the film was terrible but beautiful, and basically thanking me for making it. And his, he had lost both of his sons. And that was really emotional for me to hear someone who actually went through this, you know, not this exact situation, but that kind of a loss. And they actually had the balls to watch the film. And that's like who I imagine Sarah is. It's like the type of person who like is going to face it head on and, you know, at some point. And to hear that response from somebody who this is their real life, and say, you know, we had a whole long email chain between us where he basically said, this is the first time I've ever seen anything in a film that is remotely like what my life is like, what I feel like, you know. And I just like to be able to speak to someone who actually really went through it, and like through our, this art that we made, you know, like that's like the biggest achievement that we could have, is that somebody found something in this, some solace in this, like a person who went through it is not, it's not made worse by watching it. They feel like someone understands me. And in addition to that one father, I also got another message today from another father saying, I lost my son 18 months ago. He's obviously a young father. I can tell by looking at both of them that their kids were very young. And he was like, I lost my son 18 months ago. Thank you, thank you, thank you for making this film. So I feel like, to me, that's the biggest achievement of the movie, is like, I wanted people to feel something, not, you know, people who hadn't experienced something like this. I wanted them to feel something profound, but also like people, I mean, the loftiest goal is sort of people who have gone through this, for them to be like, yeah, this is what it fucking feels like, you know? And that's kind of what these people were basically saying. And yeah, this is only two fathers who have lost their kids, but that's like, I was just so surprised to even receive a response from them at all, and not like something like, I hate you, how dare you even try to understand what I'm going through. But instead, it was just this beautiful response from both of them, like, you really captured what it, I feel like, you know? And I just wanted to make a very visceral film where people could get something out of it, and they could feel something, and it, maybe it could help them in some way. And that is like a total pipe dream. And then when I got those messages, I was like, maybe it is possible, you know? So that was really cool.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I told Nick that I wasn't going to revisit it, but I surely will upon its Blu-ray release. I'm going to get it.
We're not going to have a Blu-ray release, unfortunately.
No,
are you going to have a DVD release?
We're going to have a DVD release, which is, you know, it kills me as a DP not having a Blu-ray release. Which,
just out of curiosity, why, just because Frank and I...
Why does that happen?
Why
that happens to a lot of films we like.
Because I think it costs a little bit more to make a Blu-ray, and I don't know what the justification for that is. I just know that, like, you know, look, we're lucky to have a distributor at all.
Right.
But they just don't, you know, like, so I'm not going to say anything bad, but yes, it a little part of me died inside when I put my heart and soul into shooting this film as well as directing it. And I think it's probably, it personally, it's my favorite work as a cinematographer that I've ever done. And
work deserves to be seen in Blu-ray, but I understand.
I know, it's a shame. It's a real shame. I'm very, very saddened by that. But, you know, I also just think about the bigger picture, and I'm like, you know what, I'm fucking lucky I just made a movie at all,
right?
You know? So
right.
Hopefully people can still appreciate it, you know, on
I'll
DVD.
Get the DVD. I'll get the DVD for sure. We'll both buy it, and we'll make our listeners buy it too. Yeah,
that's great.
We'll get a whole crew of people to buy it.
Awesome.
But moving on to what else you have coming up, I have to say that the new HBO series Vinyl, produced by Scorsese, Terrence Winter, and Mick Jagger, from the two trailers I've seen and the cast that's been assembled, I think this looks like probably one of the greatest fucking things I've ever seen in my entire life.
I bet you're going to love it. You're going to love it.
That's like no joke whatsoever. I've been making everybody watch. I even made my mom watch the trailer, and I felt bad a little bit after that. But, I mean, I can't even wait for this. And, I mean, from everything you've said prior about this, this hopefully will live up to being the greatest fucking thing I've ever seen.
I feel like I kind of struck gold with this job. Like, it was sort of, as a cinematographer, there was that side of me. Now, I don't know if I could totally separate the two things, but as a DP, my biggest dream was always to shoot, like, a period piece that was an eight, you know, like maybe, I mean, actually I'm a movie person, to be honest, but if you're going to shoot any TV series, it's like to shoot an HBO series that is produced and created by Terrence Winter and Scorsese and Mick Jagger. And it's a period piece as a DP, and like the visual inspiration is, you know, like Scorsese movies from the '70s and
right.
combined with other things that I like, also brought to the table, and like you're following and sort of you're like continuing on a look established by Rodrigo Prieto and Martin Scorsese. It's sort of a huge, it's not sort of, it is a huge honor, and it's basically the dream job. It's the dream job. And I normally haven't, I've never actually taken over a show that has the look has been established by someone else, but I was like, it's Rodrigo and Marty. Like, I am happy to come in and try to continue their style, and make them proud. And so, you know, what's great about the show visually and also just even narratively is that because of the way that, you know, Scorsese's style is, you have the sky is the limit almost with what you can do creatively, because he does utilize a lot of different devices to tell a story, you know, like it's not just, he doesn't shoot a movie all one way, you know, in any one episode, there may be Steadicam and handheld and crane shots and dolly shots and like super graphic center punch shots. So there's just like, it's not one thing, and it doesn't have to be one thing, and he gets away with it. And so therefore we are allowed to do it. And so it's just visually never gets boring. And, you know, I was also able to luckily add a little bit of myself into it, into the look, and take it in a direct, you know, like continue what they were doing, but also like sprinkle some of me in there. And
right.
I'm shooting it. I'm alternating DP with another amazing DP who I admire so much. This guy, David Franco, who, you know, is an amazing DP who shot tons of episodes of Game of Thrones and also Boardwalk Empire. And so I'm shooting, you know, Rodrigo and Scorsese did the pilot. I shot 5 episodes and David shot 4. And it's starring Bobby Cannavale and Olivia's in it. Olivia Wilde's in it. She's the other main character.
So close.
I know. It's kind of cool. Like, we went straight from Meadowland into doing this project together in a totally different capacity, in a completely different scenario. Like, we went from a little tiny indie movie with no money where she was the producer and the lead, and I was the director and the DP. And now we're here in this huge, like, giant
Scorsese
circus.
Plant. Yeah.
Yeah, where Scorsese's our boss, and she's the actress, and I'm the DP, and it was good. It proved that we could keep going and like keep working together, even in a different capacity, and like be a support for each other. So that part about it was really amazing. And it's just the actors, the writing obviously is amazing. The directors are so great to work with. The producers are great to work with, but the acting is just like, it's insane. And the music. That's the other thing that makes it so special.
God.
It looks like a total blast.
Yeah, like I don't think people are really prepared for what it is, or maybe it's been so hyped up. I mean, maybe they're going to be disappointed. I don't know, but the point is like for me, when I basically, to put it to you this way, when I first saw the pilot, I literally at the end of it, I had tears in my eyes, but I was grinning ear to ear. I just like had a perma smile on. And I didn't have tears in my eyes because I was upset. I had tears in my eyes because I was like, holy fucking shit, I can't believe I am about to be a DP on this show. Yeah. So anyway, that's basically.
I would have to imagine. Yeah, I would have to imagine. I mean, you're no stranger to the HBO family, having worked on Looking, and obviously this represents a totally different milieu and change of pace stylistically from that show. And I know Frank and I are very anxious to see it, and we'll be hyping it up throughout the coming months leading up to its January. I think it debuts in January, correct, or February?
January.
Yep. So, my birthday month.
Yep. There you go. So, go ahead.
No. I was going to say it's going to be a good birthday present for you.
Absolutely. Luck came out on my birthday. That didn't end up so well, but whatever. I'm still pissed about that, but you know, it's all good because Vinyl's coming out. So that should heal my wound up that I'm still sore from Luck being canceled, but whatever. So, anyway, thank you so very much for coming on our show. This was fantastic, and thank you again. I know you're super busy and super tired.
No, it's Vinyl, fine. It's fine. It's great.
Yeah. So thank you.
Can't say thank you enough. And like we said before, just Meadowland is just a total knockout. We'll be telling people about it left and right, and it's definitely one of those movies that after after many other movies will have been seen and forgotten about, that's one that you won't likely forget about. So thank you very much for making it and for coming on the show and talking to us. And, like I said, we'll be looking out for you in the future for sure and all your projects.
Thank you guys so much for having me on the show and everything. Great.
Absolutely. If you ever want to come back, talk about Vinyl or your next directorial effort, you are more than welcome back anytime. We'd be more than happy to have you.
Sure. Would love to.
Awesome. Well, cool. Thank you again.
Thanks, guys.
Take it easy.
Bye. Bye-bye.